Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.
Good evening to you. Welcome to Beneath the Surface. Beneath the Surface. I can hardly hear me. I did in the first couple of words, Cindy. Glad you could join us tonight. Paul Morano here. Between now and 11 p.m.
Eastern Standard Time.
Attempting to bring a little sanity into our world of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. This is Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meets. Mondays between 10 and 11. Glad you could join us. And across the console from me is my guest and yours. There he is, ladies and gentle things. The man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Kent Neal.
I don't know how I qualify for being. I get the man part, but the myth and the legend. Yeah. I want to know the legend that goes along with
my
story.
The legend is almost like supernatural.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's inexpressible.
Yeah. Okay. It doesn't. It. You know. It's most of it's made up, of course. But
That's.
But
legend.
There's a kernel of truth in the legend. In the legend of Kent Niebuhr. But we don't want to destroy that for everybody who believes in the legend.
No, let's not mar the illusion.
Yes. Well, glad you could join us, Kent.
I'm glad to be here.
And hello, Cindy, behind, at least from my angle, behind the glass.
How you doing?
Complain I can't. Yourself?
I'm doing good.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Tonight's topic that we will delve beneath the surface is unjust laws. What to do about them. Unjust laws. If you want to get involved in our conversation as we seek to delve and uncover some of the truth and mystery behind the question of unjust laws, you can do that just that at 978-454-4980. That is 978-454-4980. And or, please, go to my Facebook page, my personal website at paulmorano.com. That's paulmorano.com. And that Morano has a U, not an A or an O.
M-U-R-A-N-O?
You bet, just like the car.
Murano.
No, it's not Murano, it's Morano.
Okay.
All right.
So does the word for mason in Italian is muratore, and the word mura is walls, like big walls for like a city.
Yeah.
Walls around a city. So
that makes sense, doesn't it?
You think you've got some masons in your ancestry?
One never knows. And, supposedly the Muranos also were Jewish people that were pretending to be Catholic.
Wow.
Or Christian at a certain time because there was persecution against Jews.
Wow.
Then again, there were the Moors down in that area for a while, too.
Where is this? Is this Naples, Sicily?
We're just talking about Europe in general.
Yeah.
Italy, Spain, some of France.
Portugal.
And so who knows where the word comes from? I don't. Right. Maybe I should do some kind of, what do they call it?
Like a genetic thing or a family tree?
One of them kind of things.
Yeah. So where is your family from in Italy?
Well, half of them are from the Naples area, and the other half is from Sicily.
That's kind of typical. Most of the Italians I've known throughout my life, and I've lived in New York and Boston, they would always say Sicilian and Napolitan.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I thought I was unique.
You are. Okay. You are. You may share genes with your siblings and your parents, but you are an utterly unique, irreproducible. Did I say that right?
No, I don't think my genes would fit them.
Irreproducible. Yeah. Is that a word? Did I make that up?
You just made that up.
All right.
Yeah, it is. Now you got me messed up.
All right.
Irreplaceable.
Irreproducible.
Unreproducible. Who knows?
But you just can't reproduce. We need a grammarian to call in.
But the name Niebuhr, which is your last name, that's a German name, I would imagine.
It is a German name. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you look at it the old way, I'm a quarter German.
Okay. So your father is half German?
Half German, half English.
Okay. And your mother?
My mother was three quarters French Canadian and a quarter Portuguese.
So if you had to choose one, it'd have to be French Canadian then.
That would be pretty cool.
To say that's your majority.
I'm more French Canadian than anything else. Yeah. I did have my mother had me do the ancestry.com swab your saliva in your cheek thing.
Okay.
And it's funny, my sister's genetically mostly Portuguese. I am mostly northern England, Scotland, Ireland.
Wow.
Yeah. And France.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Isn't that interesting?
The French-Canadian part.
So there seems to be no German in either of us, you know, genetically speaking.
And yet you have a German last name and you're a quarter German.
Right.
How do you... Who knows?
I don't know. That's a useless quarter, I guess.
It is. I guess we all come from the same stock.
Yeah.
And we're all of the same race,
Adam and
as
Eve.
They say.
Yeah.
Yes.
There is only one race.
978-454-4980 is our phone number. Talking about unjust laws tonight. 978-454-4980. All right, Kent. Eventually, I want to read a couple of few excerpts from Martin Luther King's letter from Birmingham Jail, because he speaks about unjust laws.
I know. I'm familiar with Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter. Is this the same letter?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And was that supposed to be funny? I'm just trying to understand. Okay.
Well, I'm assuming the Martin Luther King we know is Martin Luther King Jr., but I don't want to slight Martin Luther King Sr. by...
Well, Martin Luther King Sr., I know nothing about, actually.
I believe, and I could be totally wrong about this, this is just coming out of somewhere, that he also was a preacher.
Okay. Cool. So, like father, like son?
I guess so.
Okay. Anyway, let's delve beneath the surface on some of these terms, so at least we and our audience can be all on the same page here. Now, when we say unjust laws... We need to first think about what the terms justice and law means.
Mm.
So I'll just throw it out to you one at a time. Justice, real quick, not a big diatribe.
It's what's right.
Yeah, I would say that. Rightness.
It's doing what's right or getting what's right or the implementation or the accomplishment of what's right.
Of rightness. And it's funny. A lot of people think when they hear justice in our modern age, they think penalty or punishment.
Punishment, yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Right.
That's not what justice is. That's a part of justice because you're bringing something back to rightness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But justice itself is rightness.
Right.
Yeah.
And it may be right that someone be punished.
Of course.
But that's only one small aspect.
Something has to happen for something to become wrong in order for it to be righted by punishment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right on. We're going to get to the word rights in a second.
Okay.
But first, let's get to law.
Mm.
Law. What is, off the top of your head, law?
It's the explicit proclamation, if you will, if not codification, of the particular definitions of what is right, what is just.
Okay.
What justice is.
So it's an ordinance that is promulgated, usually by an authority figure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the sake of the common good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think of English common law, which at least many, many years ago, it was not actually written down. It was just sort of customs that everybody was aware of. And you'd have these councils, yeah. parliament, right, who would explain it.
Explain it, implement it, codify it.
Right.
So there's basically two kinds of law that we could talk about here. One is positive law, and that is law that is posited from above, from an authority
placed,
figure.
Placed, implemented.
So that usually relates to civil law, or even religious law. If God commands things, that's positive law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's also a law that comes from within. It's inherent in the object itself, and that's called natural law when it's talking about human beings. And so it is a law by which we can understand through reason what is good and what is bad actions and behaviors.
Yeah.
And they correspond to our human nature, or they contradict it. And of course, if you do good acts, then it contributes to your human flourishing. So there's external law, or law that is promulgated from above, and then there's internal law, which we call natural law. Get that?
I think so.
All right.
I got it written down in all my notes here.
Okay. Now, let's think of some of these other. There's so many little words that we use today in our modern parlance that have changed from the traditional meanings relating to this. And I'm just going to start with rights and goods. Okay?
Yeah.
Rights. What is a right?
Yeah. A right is something that corresponds to justice.
Yes.
Which should also correspond to natural law that is objective.
So in other words, rightness is goodness.
Yeah.
No?
And I think...
That's too important to blow away. Is rightness good?
Yeah, it ought to... Well, that's supposed to be...
It has to
definition.
Be good, right?
Yeah,
by exactly. definition,
right.
That which is right is that which is good.
Exactly. And,
right.
you know, I think this is portrayed in the Declaration of Independence, where it
yeah.
lays out, we hold these truths to be self-evident. In other words, it's not. We're not making this up. We didn't take a vote on this.
Mm.
This isn't what we want.
And I think what they mean here by self-evident is not necessarily what other philosophers mean, but what they mean here is that it is intrinsic to our being. It's not something that we, the state, or the government is going to impose on you.
I think they're trying to express that what they were stating is an expression of, it's putting into words the natural law.
Yeah. And to continue that line in the Declaration, that all men are created with inalienable rights, three mm-hmm. of which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Endowed with these rights by their creator.
By their creator.
In other words, no parliament, no government, no authority figure, no tyrant, no senate, we're not beholden to any person for these rights. They are natural. They are because of...
They are because we are human.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they correspond to our human nature.
And it's not just human nature, though, because our human nature exists in a complementarity or in a harmony with the natural world.
Well, I know, but when it comes to rights, they do correspond to our human nature. Other species have rights, you could say, mm-hmm. that correspond to their nature.
I would say that, think of property rights, for example. Right?
Yeah.
This is where human rights intersect with natural rights. So, you know, you have a piece of land, you have a piece of earth. Mm. What exactly, how do you assert rights over that?
Mm.
Because I think if you just look at human rights in a vacuum, they're abstract, they're immaterial. You could get, like, think of what they said, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These are abstracts, right? I mean, life is not... living life, you could say, how it's manifested, how it's lived, is not necessarily a concrete thing. Happiness is the easy one to say. Liberty as an abstract.
What is your point here?
So in order for these rights to have real world implications, they have to intersect with natural law. So the natural law per humans.
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get our terminology correct.
Yeah.
When we say the term natural law, traditionally that means the eternal law applied to human beings.
Right.
When we say the term laws of nature,
mm-hmm.
those are laws that apply to
science,
other parts of nature.
Right.
Not
right.
necessarily science.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They can apply to inanimate objects,
yep.
like physical sciences. They can apply to biological creatures.
Mm-hmm.
They can apply to botanical creatures.
Right.
Those are something distinct from natural law itself, which is human behavior.
Right. And my point is, humans were not created in a vacuum. God created the natural realm and placed humans in it to be in harmony with this. So yeah. Somehow there's a law governing all of this, and we could focus particularly...
Yeah, well, Aquinas calls that the eternal law.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you take it, what are the components of the eternal law? Natural law, as you were saying, as...
Well, the components of the eternal law are the character of God himself that permeates the entire universe.
Yeah.
Which is love, truth, justice, goodness. And so the question about natural law is, how is love, truth, justice, goodness, how is that applied to human beings, and what does that mean in terms of human acts? But anyway, let's not lose our audience too much. The term rights, generally speaking, used to mean having the freedom to attain the goods of human nature.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
The true, the good,
having,
and the beautiful.
Having the freedom to attain the goods of natural human inclination.
Right.
So, we gotta stop right there. This is too deep to stop. After this break, I want to quickly go over this notion of what I mean, or what is traditionally meant by rights, vis-a-vis our verses, actually, what the modern world understands by rights, and explain how it corresponds to goods and natural human inclinations. But we have an inclination right now to take a break. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, and we're trying to go beneath the surface on this topic of unjust laws tonight. Paul Morano with my guest Kent Niebuhr. Don't go away. We'll be back in a flash. We're back. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. Kent, you're familiar with Heartbeat Crisis Pregnancy Help.
Yeah.
Aren't you?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Yeah. It's been around since 1992.
I was going to say, it's got a long history.
Yeah. We were blessed enough to start that off the ground. And it's been around for, what does that make it?
Did you say 92?
Yeah, so that would be 2002, 2012.
Almost
that would be 27 years.
Almost 30 years.
Of Heartbeat existing.
And was that based out of St. Margaret's in Burlington?
Yeah.
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 Right.
Yeah, I came home from Florida. I lived in Florida for 5 years, and there was a crisis pregnancy center, like every town, it seemed like, had one almost. So I came home, and I said, well, why not here?
Yeah.
Because there really wasn't that many. I've heard of Birthright, but none of them were around. So we started Heartbeat Crisis Pregnancy Center, and it's at 113 Wynn Street in Burlington, Massachusetts. But they serve women, young girls and young women, all over the place. The Lowell area, the Lawrence area, the Lynn area, all over the place. And so definitely give them a call if you think that you might need help. And that you might be pregnant and need assistance. It is 781-229-7887. That's 781-229-7887, Heartbeat. And you can also look them up on the web. I think it's pregnancyma.org. But anyway, Mr. Kent, getting back to our topic at hand, which is unjust laws. I just want to go over this... these terms a little quickly so that we can continue the conversation. A natural inclination are inclinations that are natural to a species. Mm. All right. So cats have natural inclinations. Give me an example of a cat inclination.
To hunt.
Okay. Yeah.
Go get
to
the
hunt.
Mice. Right.
Yeah. To meow.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I actually learned recently that cats meow for humans.
All right. Don't worry about it. They meow.
Yeah, they do.
Can you give me off and do another tangent?
Hunt. They want to hunt. They want to sleep about 75% of
the day. All
right.
Give me an example of a natural inclination of an elephant.
To eat peanuts.
Okay. I'll buy that.
To make that trumpet sound with his trunk.
Does he make a trumpet sound?
Well, okay. I'm calling it a trumpet sound. Yeah. I don't know what else to call it. Yeah. What would you call it?
To act in herds, right?
To live in herds.
Yeah.
Yep.
Give me an example of what a natural inclination is to a human.
To happiness.
To be happy.
All men seek happiness.
And how do you get there?
That's by pursuing the true, the good, and the beautiful.
So in other words, you have to have the use of reason to understand or to know the true and the good and the beautiful.
You've got to navigate in order to
in order to freely pursue it. So already you're talking about the two powers of the human soul that no other creatures have, which is intellect and will. Mm. All right, so it starts there, right? We have natural human inclinations of reason and free will, and also other things, emotions, passions that we share with other animals, involuntary things and so forth. We need to eat, procreate, etc. So natural inclinations are, they overlap, but human beings have unique natural inclinations because, like you said, we seek truth. We seek happiness. These these are things that we seek to create.
Right, not just what's expedient or not, convenient.
And
or,
not only that, we go beyond the survival instincts of food and sex or procreation.
Right.
At least most of us go beyond that. It's human.
Would you still say most of us?
It's human to go beyond that.
Right.
There would be no arts, there would be no sciences, etc.
And there'd be no self-sacrifice, or at least it would be very limited context.
So those are some of our human inclinations that we have a right to. Mm. We have a right to pursue satisfaction of.
Right. We should,
you get that?
We should be unobstructed in pursuing the true, the good, and the
and
beautiful.
And the things that do satisfy or fulfill those inclinations, those natural human inclinations, are called goods.
Yes.
The objects and the actions or behaviors that satisfy natural human inclinations, food, eating, truth for education, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
These are called goods.
These things that facilitate the pursuit of the true, the good, and the beautiful.
They fulfill. They fulfill natural human inclination needs to be fulfilled.
Right.
So we need to basically behave or act properly in order that these goods that we choose fulfill our natural human inclinations. And if we do it properly, we can become the H word.
Happy.
Yes. And we can the F word.
Be free?
Well, freedom, yes, but I was thinking of flourishing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how...
when people say the F word...
I know. Well, this is another F word. Flourishing.
We can flourish.
Yes, we can flourish. Right. Exactly how we are meant to live.
Now, you know, I said that people, all men seek happiness, and that is...
Mm. What?
Who said that?
That all men seek happiness? Aristotle.
Yeah, Aristotle.
Yeah.
However, I can... put this in the context of my own experience of my own conversion, and one of the things that I realized that for me identified the Catholic Church as being the true faith is because I wanted to know, so what does happiness consist in? And so what occurred to me was love. So I think Aristotle didn't go far enough to say all men seek happiness. I think all men seek reciprocal love or reciprocated love, to love perfectly and to be loved.
And why is that? Because they reflect who?
God, who is love. And
between the Trinity, eternal divine
persons. The Father, Son, the Holy Spirit reciprocate this love amongst themselves. And so we, being made in the image and likeness of the Blessed Trinity, are also seeking not only to love and not only to be loved, but to love and to be loved perfectly. Anyone who loves someone should be frustrated that they can't love them perfectly, right? As well as they love them, there should be some point at which they're frustrated that they failed to love perfectly or they can't quite love perfectly. And likewise, that we want to be loved perfectly. Some people love us, but very poorly or, you know, on a part-time basis.
Well, I think a lot of people... love to the point where you really can't call it love anymore. It's lost its essence or substance.
You mean depleting love?
No. I think that there's a lot of abuse that people call love.
Oh, yeah, right.
And there are a lot of people in abusive relationships that are called love, but you could say they're disordered love, or if they're bad enough, they're actually not love at all.
They're actually not love, right.
But let me just quickly get back to this rights thing. Because in modern times, in post-Lockean modern times, rights mean non-governmental interference. That's what people usually mean today by rights.
I would actually.
In other words, I have a right to do hard drugs. They would say because I have a right to harm myself as long as it doesn't harm somebody else.
I think what it comes down to is people confuse rights with desires. Anything I desire, I have a right to.
Sometimes.
I want to do this, or I want to have that, therefore I have a right to it.
So, basically, the modern notion of rights, is it simply means I should have the freedom from the government to do X, Y, or Z.
I should not be limited by
governmental interference. Yeah. That's not the traditional understanding of rights, though. Mm-hmm. The traditional understanding of rights is that it is I have a right to choose what is good in order that I and the community may flourish.
Yeah, freedom is the unobstructed pursuit of what's good.
So it's not. Rights are not the freedom to do what one wants by non-governmental interference. Mm. Rights actually are, at least traditionally, those actions and behaviors that we must do in order to flourish.
Right, and we will
the
not
the freedom
flourish.
To do the good, not the freedom to do necessarily
anything.
What I want.
Right, and we can see.
But that's a huge difference.
Absolutely,
that's a huge difference.
We all know people, and we've all been caught in this ourselves to some extent or another, or at some time or another, where we pursued what we want and ended up frustrated or unhappy.
It's a problem with subjectivism today. And today's modernist would say, I have a right to be wrong, I have a right to do what is wrong.
Yep.
And to the pre-modern philosopher, that is bizarre, because that's a contradiction in terms. You don't have a right to do wrong,
right?
Because rights are that which is good for you, which is right.
Right.
So it's just a difference in definition of what the term right means.
Yeah, so to the point that the substance of rightness is endlessly debated today.
Well, that's because we're subjectivists today.
Right.
Yeah, we have lost sight in human nature, in our natural inclinations, as to what brings us to that point of happiness and flourishing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have lost, you could think of a million reasons why this happened, but we have lost sight of what it means to be human.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. And so, bottom line here is that if a law is promulgated by the state or the government that contradicts basic human goods, which are basically basic human rights, because we have a right to those goods that enable our inclinations to flourish, if you were following me earlier. So somebody like Martin Luther King, of course, with the civil rights movement, understood that sometimes civil laws do not correspond to natural law. And when they don't, human rights are violated, and those laws should be resisted.
And those rights should be asserted.
Those rights should be asserted, and those laws
should
be resisted
against the authority. Against
you can do that in many ways. You can run for Congress, or you can write to your your congressman, or run for president if you want, or just sort of try to change the culture like you and I do from the bottom up. Through media and academia and so forth.
Are we on the bottom, Paul?
Sure.
Okay.
I like to see myself.
We're underdogs.
On the bottom. Yeah.
We are underdogs.
But you can also protest, and very often, if a law is unjust, if a civil law is unjust, if it violates natural law or human rights, it should be protested.
Right.
Peacefully, but it should be protested.
Right.
Which brings me to Martin Luther King in the Birmingham jail, when he was jailed for civil disobedience. He wrote a letter, and he spoke about natural law and how exactly what we were talking about. If a civil law violates natural law, it should be resisted. And I'll just read a few of his quotes, a few of his excerpts from that letter. Let's see. Quotes. I would be the first to advocate obeying just laws. One has not only a legal but a moral responsibility to obey just laws. Conversely, one has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws. I would agree with St. Augustine that an unjust law is no law at all. I'll stop right there for a second. Any thoughts?
Beautiful. In other words, what he's obviously, as you said, he's trying to express natural law, but he is so careful with his definition of the word law that he refers to exactly what St. Augustine said 1,700 years prior, that laws, by definition, can only be good and right and true.
Yes.
If a law
and just
institutes or imposes something other than what is good and right and true, it's in fact not even a law.
Right.
So,
and good and right and true are defined by how they correspond to human nature and human rights.
And I would even put it in a bigger sense, how they correspond to reality.
Yeah, yeah. Another quote from Martin Luther King in Birmingham Jail. Now, what is the difference between the two? King says. How does one determine whether a law is just or unjust? A just law is a man-made code that squares with the moral law or the law of God. An unjust law is a code that is out of harmony with the moral law. To put it in terms of St. Thomas Aquinas, an unjust law is a human law that is not rooted in the eternal law and the natural law. Any law that uplifts human personality is just. Any law that degrades human personality is unjust.
Yeah, and I think when he says personality, we would more use the term personhood, right?
Personhood.
Yep.
The flourishing of the human being.
The human being, right. Yeah, absolutely. So when you, and of course, obviously, he's talking about racism here. You're degrading African Americans by the law. According to law, you're degrading a whole class of human beings.
Why? Because you're keeping them from attaining the goods to satisfy their natural human inclinations.
That flourishing. How can they flourish according to these promulgated laws, which he, again, to backtrack, would say are no laws at all because they inhibit, obstruct, or even you could say prevent human flourishing of an entire class of people.
Yes, an entire group of human beings. Yep. How about one more? Or maybe two? Yeah, one more. Quotes from MLK. More and more, I feel that people of ill will have used time much more effectively than have people of goodwill. We will have to repent in this generation not merely of the hateful words and actions that bad people, but for the appalling silence of good people. That hits me squarely. That hits me right in the heart. That the appalling silence of those who have an obligation to speak out, which really is everybody, but those of a good will who at least are oriented to speak out, but they don't because of lack of courage or whatever their problem is, they are just as guilty, perhaps, as those who promulgate the evil.
I want to put a slightly different spin on this, but I hear the music, so let me put a slightly different spin on this when we get back.
Oh, good, good teaser. Kent is going to put his spin on this right after this break, so don't go away. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, Paul Morano with my guest, Kent Niebuhr, talking about the notion of unjust laws. We'll be right back. That's 978-454-4980. Beneath the Surface, Paul Morano with my guest, Mr. Kent Niebuhr, here in the beautiful WCAP studios. Our topic tonight, we're delving beneath the surface on unjust laws. And before the break, we were talking about Martin Luther King and how he penned a historical letter from the Birmingham jail when he was there for civil disobedience about the nature of law and how whenever a civil law contradicts or does not square up with natural law, which includes human rights, then that unjust law should be resisted. So, Kent, you said you were going to give your take or your... What did you say?
A different spin.
Thank you. Your spin on this.
Yeah, you were saying that there... So when these oppressors come, let's say, the people who are implementing or imposing unjust laws, people have to resist them. And you were decrying the people who don't, who ought to. They're either cowards or lazy or something like that. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
okay,
do you want to re-express it?
Yeah, let's clarify it.
Okay.
If they do nothing out of cowardness or laziness, then there's a huge problem.
Right.
If they do it out of wisdom, prudence wisdom,
right,
that they are biding their time for the perfect time to strike or to say something or to do something, but it's in their mind and they're just waiting for the right time, that's a different thing.
Right. Now, what I was going to say is, why would these people be disinclined to act? And I think there is a sentiment among these people who recognize the injustice that they are living according to the true, the good, and the beautiful. They are living a life of peace and harmony. And so they see resisting or fighting against the enemies of freedom, the enemies of the true, the good, and the beautiful, as a violation of this peace, this harmony that mm-hmm. they ought to be living.
Okay.
And so I would not necessarily call them cowards. I would say that the way they're living is the way all people ought to live. However, here's the point where they must act. When you see that the true and the good and the beautiful are being risked, that they are in danger of being overwhelmed by the enemies of the true, the good, and the beautiful, the perpetrators of unjust laws, then you have to fight, that you have to resist them. And so there's a point at which, this is why pacifism in the end doesn't hold up, because we must protect the innocent, we must defend the truth, we must guard it with our lives even.
Yeah. Well, how do all of those words differ from what I said about if something is an unjust law, it contradicts human rights?
I'm not contradicting. What the only thing I would say clarifying yeah. is that to say that people who don't resist evil are cowards is not necessarily the case. You pointed out one way in which, one sense in which they might not be cowards. That is, they're it's a strategy. They're waiting, right?
Right. Sure.
But maybe they're not waiting. Maybe they're thinking, I am supposed to live at peace.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to love my enemies, pray for those who persecute me, and not. Mel Gibson made a movie about
this.
Wait
a minute.
Right?
I mean, you can't keep going in tangents here. I see what you're saying, that the people who are living rightly are at least trying to. Nobody's perfect.
Yep.
People who are trying to live rightly and at peace and to love their enemies, which I'm glad you said that. That's huge, which hardly anybody does, unfortunately. But it's huge.
And pray for them.
Indeed. If they're living this way, then you're saying that not speaking out about the injustices around them might be okay because they're speaking with their lives.
I'm saying this is an error. Yeah. But that's what they're thinking. I think at some point you have to recognize that to prevent greater evil.
Now I understand that after Eden there's mm-hmm. going to be evil everywhere. So you can't speak about every kind of evil that there is. Obviously. Wait a minute.
Sure.
So that's not what we're saying here. That we're talking about obvious, grave violations of human rights.
And in particular, laws.
That is around you.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Luther King's example was a great one, I think, because it was an obvious, grave, permeating violation of human rights.
Correct.
I think today's equivalent to that, which is even more grave, is the abortion question.
Right.
It's permeating. 4,200 preborn children per year are being brutally slaughtered legally in this country.
4,200.
Per day, every
right.
single day in this country.
Right.
Yeah.
Not per year.
Yeah, 1.3 million per year. At around 70 million since Roe versus Wade. So we're not talking about just an attitudinal or a discriminatory, you can't get a job because of X, Y, or Z. We're talking about directly killing the innocent here.
Right.
So, I mean, if you have these grave evils, these grave injustices all around you in a society and you say or do nothing, then I think that's what Martin Luther King was talking about there really speaks to us loudly.
Yeah.
If we're saying or doing nothing about it, we are accomplices by neglect.
Yeah, and there's the phrase, and I don't remember who said it, that all it takes for evil to prosper is for good people
yeah.
to do nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Wiesel, I can't remember, something like that.
Was it really?
A Jewish philosopher.
Was it Elie Wiesel? Really?
I think it might have been.
Really?
Or somebody else. But anyway, if you know, give us a call, 978-454-4945. 4980. Okay, with the time that we left, that we have left, I want to talk to you, Kent, about some of the what you might consider unjust laws that we have on the books today that violate human nature and human dignity.
Yeah.
What might give
I feel
me an
like
example
this
or
is
two?
The speed round or something.
Well, we only have about nine minutes, if okay. that, by
well,
8 minutes.
You mentioned abortion.
Okay.
The question. Well, you could, I could think of things like no-fault divorce.
All right, let's stop right there. A lot of people today would say there's nothing wrong with that. I have always found that repulsive.
Yeah, exactly.
No-fault divorce. If somebody, let's just say the stereotypical, a woman gives up her life, gives up her potential career for her man. She stays home and raises children and cooks the meals and does the clothing and is a wonderful wife. And after 15, 20 years, the guy says, well, you know, you're wonderful, but you're getting up there in age, and falls in love with his secretary, who's 20 years younger. I mean, no-fault divorce says that you have no rights here, woman. You're going to be left to the curb, and he's going to go off with somebody else. Now, that is unjust.
That is absolutely unjust.
That is an injustice.
That divorce definitely indicates that someone is at fault, and it's not the woman.
Yeah, in that situation, correct.
Right.
Yeah.
So to say that we're going to institute no-fault divorce, the woman has no way to defend herself. There's no way to... I mean,
she
could
sacrificed
argue,
20
yes.
years of her life, mm-hmm. education, mm-hmm. work, et cetera, et
yep.
cetera.
Yep.
And where is she now?
And probably the 20, what I call, career-building years of her life. So had she never married this guy, she would have a phenomenal
right.
career.
Now, because of no-fault divorce, women can no longer depend on men in that respect.
Right. They can't place that demand on them.
And hence the imbalance occurs. Men cannot depend on women in their respect, in the opposite or contrary respect.
Right.
And now you have no interdependence between men and women, and we have lost sight of what it means to be a male and female in relationship.
And the phrase that you do sometimes hear today is no accountability.
Yeah.
Right? We like to point fingers at the government and say, they need to be held accountable for this, that, or the other thing. Well, why don't we apply that in divorce?
All right. What else?
Well, here's a good one, because this has some subtleties to it. The death penalty.
Okay.
So it's easy to think, well, you know, God says thou shalt not kill, right? So how could anyone countenance the death penalty?
We really need a whole show on this.
We do, and we have, what, like 2.5 minutes?
And there's a few more things we could talk about, too. But,
yeah.
but go ahead. What about the death penalty?
Well, the question is, it pivots, I think, on innocence or guilt, right?
Okay.
Someone who has, say, murdered or raped or some heinous crime, injustice or according to justice, I should say, just to be very clear, should be penalized, punished for what they've done. They should be deprived of certain goods of society.
Correct.
So,
but does it have to be life itself?
No.
Okay.
However, you could say that locking them away in jail for a life sentence with no chance of parole is depriving them of life and the pursuit of happiness,
a certain quality of life, yes.
Exactly. However, so where does the death penalty go with this? And people would say, well, how could you say the death penalty is okay, but abortion is wrong? That dichotomy hinges on innocence.
Of course it does.
Right? Whereas the baby in the womb is absolutely innocent,
yes.
has done nothing
to deserve any violence
to be punished for, right?
Any punishment whatsoever.
However, someone who's been convicted of a crime, let's assume that they were correctly convicted of the crime, there's no miscarriage of justice, deserves some penalization. Now, subtleties come in where you could say, and this is kind of come up for the past, 20 years or so, where the death penalty may make sense in certain cultures where the innocent cannot be protected otherwise.
If there are any cultures, yes.
If those cultures even exist, right? Is there any culture on the planet that couldn't, say, give someone a life sentence?
When John Paul II was writing his blurb on the Catechism of the Catholic Church, he was hard-pressed to say that there were any left in the world that could not keep the innocent safe.
In a prison and just feed him and keep him alive until natural death. But at least in theory, hypothetically, there is a scenario conceivable in which the innocent could not be protected as long as this perpetrator, this malefactor,
was alive. So the principle of legitimate defense would say that if the only way to stop the innocent from being harmed or killed is to do a fatal blow to the perpetrator, then you have to do that.
Which you could kind of say is the basis of the just war theory as well.
Yes.
We have to actually go fight and drop bombs and
shoot. But it has to be defensive.
And it has to be proportionate as well.
Oh, proportionate, sure. But it has to begin by being a defensive kind of...
It's a defensive measure. Yeah. Correct.
Right.
The only way to protect the innocent.
So we should do a whole show on capital punishment because there's all, especially in Catholic circles where Pope Francis came out with his new blurb for the Catechism and the word inadmissible is there. And there's been a whole lot of argumentation about that we'll save for another show.
That's another show.
Yeah. Can you think of anything else that might be an unjust law today that that needs resisting or changing?
Well, we
that violates human dignity.
We talked about the big ones.
Yeah.
No.
What does that mean? You looked at the clock.
I looked at the clock.
Yeah.
Those are the big ones.
Give me a small one then.
All right. A small unjust law. Yeah. Really compelling someone to do something against their will. Now, I could see someone having a disordered will, but I could also see there being a problem with compelling to do something. Compelling someone to
do. Give me an example. How about taxes?
Yeah,
paying taxes is that unjust?
There's an argument to be made there. I think you have to get into the minutiae of the taxes, though. In theory, are taxes unjust?
That's the question.
Right. No, taxes are not necessarily unjust.
Right,
in theory,
but where they're going today might be.
Not just where they're going, but how they're implemented, how they're demanded of you, what are the consequences if you don't pay the taxes, right? Do you have any say in what taxes you pay, what you can support?
Would you say that same-sex marriage is an unjust law?
If it contradicts human nature, then it is.
So would you say that same-sex marriage contradicts human nature?
You know, I'm glad you brought this up because the word nature, the root of the word is birth. Natus, birth in Latin. So same-sex unions cannot produce a birth.
Yes.
So they're contrary to nature.
Yes. Okay.
And I wouldn't even call them unions.
By the way,
they're legal unions.
Just to elaborate a little more on that fact, traditionally, marriage has seen, and of course the church has continued to uphold this, that the two ends or purposes or meanings or significances of marriage is union and procreation.
Right.
The unitive and the procreative.
Babies now, and bonding.
Yeah, the two Bs. You're saying that same-sex marriage cannot produce babies. I would argue that it cannot produce bonding.
Right, because
It cannot produce true union.
Now, it can produce friendship. It can produce...
Well, you can have friendship without that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, it cannot produce the bonding, the two becoming one flesh, that nature provides.
Two creatures, I don't even have to say humans, but, we're talking about human nature.
Yeah.
Two humans of the same sex cannot unite in this way.
It's
impossible. It's kind of like if you want to use analogy, you've got two plugs and you have two outlets.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Two plugs don't make electricity no matter how much they rub against each other. Same with two outlets.
Exactly.
Now, a plug and an outlet, put those together and you get a third party electricity.
That's right.
Something happens.
Which, in the last whatever 30 seconds that we have, I would also say the implications of that are that legal contraception is an unjust law.
Okay. Boy, do we need a whole show on that one? Would you say that contraception should be in the category of like junk food and alcohol that you should?
No, I would put it in the category of abortion.
Okay.
Put it in the category of same-sex unions.
That it actually should be outlawed.
Right, because it prohibits the union of two persons.
We need to delve into that beneath the surface, but we're out of time right now. Another show in the near future. I want to do that. Thank you for listening and for delving with us beneath the surface tonight. Paul Morano with Kent Niebuhr, my guest. Go to paulmorano.com. Give me your thoughts and comments. Have a great week, everybody. See you next time.
Not.
I feel silly trying to make up prayers myself. My mind starts to wander as I'm speaking to God. I just don't have time to pray. Do you recognize yourself in any of these statements? If so, we have a book for you. In Pray Fully, best-selling authors Michelle Fanley and Emily Jaminet share the rewards and frustrations of their own prayer journeys to create a practical guide that combines testimonies, tips, and journaling space to help you spend quality time with God. Whether you want to learn how to pray aloud in a group or stop your mind from wandering during prayer, Fanley and Jaminet have practical advice and the real-life experience to help you overcome obstacles to everyday prayer. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LEARN2PRAY, that's LEARN, the number 2, PRAY, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Redbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.